listening to.
The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room. Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion live on LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. Thank you for everybody joining us live. Of course, everybody in the chat room, Darth Harper, NetRanger, and myself right now. And those of you out there can go into the chat room at LVRocks.com or S2DRadio.com to join us. And that was the producer, Mr. Con Solar. Thank you very much.
By your command.
And the program is part of the A Progressive Podcast Network, as well as antiradio.net. And, of course, it's affiliated with MediaBoulevard.com. And tonight, I'm Sean O'Max, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want. Just do not call me late for dinner. And tonight, after the Political News Digest, we'll be joined by Commander Jeff Huber, and he'll be on to discuss with us our foreign policy, or lack thereof. And his blog is at zenhuber.blogspot.com. And then in the second hour, Professor Koenig Rules will be on to discuss the latest Doctor Who and Battlestar Galactica episodes. And then he will be followed by Dr. NetRanger with our pop culture discussion. And should be quite interesting. Everybody's talking about Heroes and everything else. Heroes was pretty good, except my VCR conked out the last 5 minutes, so I didn't get what was going on. And before I get into the Political News Digest, I mentioned that a lot of people emailed me about Chris Matthews from Hardball. He's in the hospital, apparently, or was just released from the hospital for complications due to diabetes. So that's why he has not been on his own program the last week and a half or so. And he wasn't on his Sunday program either. He does a syndicated 30-minute program, and actually his Sunday program is the number 2 rated Sunday, political discussion program on Sunday mornings. It's Meet the Depressed, as Limbaugh calls it, and then Chris Matthews' show, and then third is the This Week with George Snuffleupagus program. So that's where Chris Matthews, they expect him to return to his program next Monday. So I wish Chris Matthews very well and his recovery. So with that, move into the Political News Digest. And from today, they had a lot of people are asking about the Gates confirmation hearings. Well, we'll discuss that with Commander Huber when he comes on. And for right now, we'll move on to other things. Until then, today in the Cafferty file on the Situation Room on CNN, the question that Jack Cafferty asked is, Nouri al-Maliki the right person to lead Iraq into the future? Mark from Jacksonville, Florida says, I am sick and tired of everyone asking whether or not we think al-Maliki is the right man to lead Iraq. That is not for us to decide. It is for the Iraqi people to decide. As Bush and everyone else repeatedly is shoving our faces, it is a democratically elected sovereign government. We should stop sticking our noses in the Iraqi people's business and start letting them do their job so we can start packing up and leaving. So that's pretty good. And also from Andrew from New Jersey, he responds, Nouri al-Maliki is as competent to run Iraq as Bush is competent to run the United States. That says it all. So it's pretty good when the email responders to the Cafferty file come up with the one-liners here. And also, the next question for him from Cafferty was, what will the legacy be of the 109th Congress? This one's from Bernie from Lowell, Massachusetts. What will be the legacy of the 109th Congress? Pick one, greed, corruption, procrastination, fiscal irresponsibility, or earmarks, or all as I do. And it's from Bernie in Lowell, Massachusetts. And also from Brett from Ohio. They'll have left us with the knowledge that someday you too can corrupt to work under 100 days out of the year and screw up the lives of millions of people.
Mm.
And also, his last question was, New York Times columnist Frank Rich says President Bush is untethered from reality. Do you agree? Sherry from Fleetwood, Pennsylvania. I expect Bush to maintain his detachment from reality a bit as long as he's in office. It has allowed him to escape accountability for too long. Now that the media has gotten its spine back, he may not be so lucky. So it's interesting. And this also from Gary in Cary, North Carolina. This president has been out of touch with reality his entire life. He's been so pampered, he has no idea what the average American life is like and what it means to balance a checkbook or be responsible for your actions.
Hmm.
And also Tony from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. She says, hard to believe a newspaper as great and as revered as the New York Times could be guilty of such a huge understatement. So that's pretty good. Yeah, he's been this pampered lifestyle. Now his daddy's having to come to his rescue with his flunkies from his administration. James Baker with his Baker-Hamilton Commission is going to issue its report tomorrow. And then Gates coming to the rescue of Sonny Boy, taking over the Defense Department. This is ridiculous. And also from today, from ABCNews.com, nearing an 08 decision, Pataki heads to New Hampshire and Iowa. As he nears a decision on whether to run for president in 2008, Governor George Principal Belding Pataki is planning to travel to New Hampshire and Iowa on Wednesday. The governor is weighing his options and making the decision with his family, says Pataki spokeswoman Alicia Preston told ABC News. Ultimately, he and his family will be the ones to make the final decision as to whether he will run. He is thinking about it and is appreciative of all the support he has received. Again, you look at Pataki, he looks like Principal Belding from the Saved by the Bell. Do you want him as your president? I don't think so. And also, U.S. military deaths in Iraq climbed to 2,887, according to the Associated Press. As of Saturday, December 2nd, at least 2,887 members of the U.S. military have died since the beginning of the Iraq War in March 2003, according to an Associated Press count. That figure includes 7 military civilians. At least 2,316 have died as a result of hostile action, according to the military's numbers. The AP account is 4 higher than the Defense Department's tally, last updated Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. And then there was that helicopter that went down, too, so I'm not sure if that is included in those numbers either. So, and also from today, from the Washington Post, they write, Iraqi leader, it's worse than a civil war. At least one Iraqi leader says otherwise. It's worse than a civil war. In a civil war, at least know which factions are fighting each other, lamented a senior member of Iraq's government in an interview a few hours after John Drow's comments. We don't even know that anymore. It's so bloody confusing over there in Iraq. So, no kidding. It's confusing, and you got the head, confuser in chief, Bush, running the whole thing. So, that just leads to it. The fish rots from the head down, I believe. And also from today, from the Washington Post blog, the Washington Note, resignations, slow steps lead to depleted State Department. Steve Clemens, in his blog, points out that the resignation of Bolton, John Bolton, of course, the UN ambassador who's not. He's gone down in flames, follows on other officials stepping down from senior posts at the State Department. Condoleezza Rice, the girl with the David Letterman smile, now has no deputy Secretary of State and will soon face, in January, no counselor and no ambassador to the UN, Clemens warns. He added, losing Robert Zolnick, Philip Zalikow, and John Bolton is an awful lot to lose without having clear successors in place and ready to go. The already stretched-thin Secretary of State will be stretched even thinner with Bolton's departure. Robert Zolnick, the Deputy Secretary of State, stepped down this summer amid speculation that he was unhappy with being passed over for Treasury Secretary in favor of Henry Paulson. His post has been vacated since that time. Philip Zalikow, Dr. Rice's counselor, also stepped down in November to return to the private sector, and the intended successors for all three of the posts are yet unknown. So I think it'd be the Little Rascals or, some of Condoleezza Rice's invisible friends will be taken over. Who knows? And also from today, from CNN, Evan Bayh says he can unite Americans. On the same day, he officially formed a presidential exploratory committee. Senator Evan Bay of Indiana told CNN that he is capable of uniting Democrats, independents, and Republicans in a politics of common purpose. And that's not happening today, he said. He told Wolf Blitzer, but it's something I've demonstrated repeatedly an ability to do, and it's something I think we're going to need in the next president. Remember, this president came in both times saying he's going to be unite the country. He's going to be a uniter, not a divider, and it was just the opposite. Of course, Bay is the son of Senator Birch Bay, who served 2 years as the state's governor before winning a seat in the Senate in 1998. He has nearly $11 million available for a presidential race, but estimated the cost of a campaign at between $25 and $50 million. He's out of his mind. I saw somewhere the number's going to be more like $100 million. The Indiana Democrat, has said he is confident Democratic donors will sign on to his centrist message. Good luck for him. You know, he's going to get pushed out by Hillary and if Barack Obama runs and gets in there. And also, another candidate, Edwards, Taft's former rep to lead his potential campaign. Former rep David Bonnier, a one-time leader in Congress who has close ties to labor unions, has signed on to manage a future John Edwards presidential campaign. Edwards hasn't announced a repeat of his 2004 presidential bid yet, but an Edwards advisor said on Thursday that Bonnier will run the effort if Edwards decides to run. In the meantime, Edwards Bonnier has signed on as a senior advisor to Edwards' leadership pact, the One America Committee. That'd be interesting. Edwards will probably be, I don't know, unless Barack Obama gets in, they'll push Edwards to the side, but I think it'd be Edwards and Hillary in there, and then you got Governor Vilsack kind of as the governor. Maybe he'll try and stay off to the side, let Edwards and Hillary slug it out. I don't know. And let's see here. I'm ready to go. What is this? Hillary says in Washington, in the New York Post, I'm really going to go for this, says Hillary Rodham Clinton. She answered the question on everybody's mind, telling one New York lawmaker flat out, I'm really going to go for this. Clinton dropped the much-anticipated presidential bombshell during a blitz of phone calls to home state lawmakers, as well as a top money man, Attorney General-elect Andrew Cuomo and the Reverend Al Sharpton. She said to me, I'm really, really going to go for this. I'm going to make this effort, the New York lawmaker told the Post. She never said she was running for the presidency of the United States or if she was going to announce or anything like that. It wasn't a question that needed to be asked. It was an obvious conversation. So, again, she says, I'm going to go for this. So, pretty much, you know, in the bag that she's going to run for president. And also, she's also calling Iowans. In the next article from the Des Moines Register, Senator Hillary Clinton began making calls on Monday to Iowa Democrats about the state's political landscape with an eye towards its 2008 presidential nominating caucuses, aides to Clinton said. The moves come as the New York Center has accelerated the steps she has taken since her November reelection campaign toward making a decision about whether to run for president. So she's having to speed up because what's-his-name was on Barack Obama was on the Leno show pretty much saying he is going to run. So I don't know. Edwards, Darth Harper is saying that Edwards will fail. So, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It might be a slugfest, I said, between Hillary and him. And then Vilsack might be just bubble up to the top because he's a governor and all the past presidents, four out of five have all been governors, except for George H.W. Bush. And conservative Gary Bauer. So that's why I said these conservatives are stabbing McCain in the back. Conservative Gary Bauer, Romney's Mormonism, okay by me. Conservative activist Gary Bauer has joined the ranks of Christian conservatives. They're urging their fellow travelers to look past Mitt Romney's Mormon faith when considering him as a viable presidential candidate. The Christian News Service reports that Bauer said that when it comes to choosing who to vote for, issues should trump theology. There are all kinds of people out there I think have deep theological differences of opinion with, but I think I might be willing to vote for them for Senate or Congress or President, depending on the circumstances and who they are running against, Bauer said, the President of American Values. So there they go. They're already starting to stick it to McCain. So I don't think he's going to get through the nomination. I still think Romney's the one to lose now. A blog from today from the 1115 blog, Solitaire in the Oval Office. Nero fiddled while Rome burned. While Iraq burns, the butcher of Baghdad is doing the equivalent of locking the Oval Office door and playing nonstop solitaire. all the while pretending to work furiously at conducting diplomacy and concocting plans and strategies in order to make progress towards victory. And American soldiers and Iraqi citizens are dying every day as Bush conducts his pretend diplomacy and pretends to ponder what we're going to do in Iraq. Yeah, he's like his head in the sand. He's out of touch, clueless what's going on over there. He's looking to use this Baker Hamilton thing to some kind of shield so he can change direction over there. U.S. report finds fault in training of Afghan police. See, now you got Iraq is in trouble. Now Afghanistan's further getting into the trouble. 5 years after the fall of the Taliban, a joint report by the Pentagon and the State Department has found that the American-trained police force in Afghanistan is largely incapable of carrying out routine law enforcement work, and that managers of the $1.1 billion training program cannot say how many officers are actually on duty or where thousands of trucks and other equipment issued to police units have gone. I think they've gone to Iraq. In fact, most police units have less than 50% of their authorized equipment on hand as of June, says the report, which was issued 2 weeks ago but is only now circling among several relevant congressional committees. In its most significant finding, the report said no effective field training program had been established in Afghanistan, at least in part because of a slow, ineffectual start and understaffing. Police training experts have studied or have had firsthand experience with the American effort in Afghanistan, said that they agreed with the report's findings and said they had warned for years that field training was the backbone of a strong program. But they said additional programs needed to be investigated, including the quality of private contractors and the cost and effectiveness of relying on them to train the police officers. Big disaster in Afghanistan. Where did all that money go to? $1.1 billion and all the equipment's gone. Where is all this stuff at? Same thing with the last week. I wrote a story about the munitions depot in Iraq. We didn't go to the effort of guarding the munitions in Iraq, and all that stuff got scattered to the insurgents. So, and also from Sunday, from The Guardian of the UK, corruption, the second insurgency, costing $4 billion a year. The Iraqi government is in danger of being brought down by the wholesale smuggling of the nation's oil and other forms of corruption that together represent a second insurgency, according to a senior U.S. official. Stuart Bowen, who has been in charge of auditing Iraq's faltering reconstruction since 2004, said corruption had reached such levels that it threatened the survival of the state. Is this amazing? Where's this story been at? There's a huge smuggling program. It is the number one issue, Mr. Bowen told The Guardian. The pipelines that are meant to take the oil north have been blown up, so the only way to export it is by road. That leaves it vulnerable to smuggling, he said, as truckers sell their cargoes on the black market. Mr. Bowen, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, cites Iraqi figures showing that the virtual pandemic of corruption costs the country $4 billion a year. Some of that money goes straight to the Iraqi government's enemies. A U.S. government report has concluded that oil smuggling abetted by corrupt Iraqi officials is netting insurgents $100 million a year, helping make them financially self-sustaining. Good Lord. I mean, this is ridiculous, you know. Where is the accountability for all this stuff? You know, somebody should be hung up to dry for this. And also from today, Bolton's exit to Democrats' first big blow. President Bush may have just gotten a glimpse of what dealing with Congress in the final 2 years of his presidency will be like. It's going to be a living hell for him. You better get used to it. John Bolton, the Bush's temporary appointment as the U.N. ambassador, chose to step down from his post when the term expires in a couple weeks rather than go through another contentious and probably hopeless confirmation hearing in the Senate. This despite Bush's strong backing. The political landscape has radically changed, no kidding, since Bush sneaked Bolton into the job with a recess appointment last year. And presumably, Bolton was not up for the fight, this time with a Senate controlled by the Democrats. Or perhaps he simply realized he had no chance to succeed. Bush lashed out, of course. You know, he's trying to be a uniter instead of a divider, saying in a statement that he was deeply disappointed that a handful of United States senators prevented Ambassador Bolton from receiving the up-and-down vote he deserved in the Senate. But it might be time for the president to get used to this treatment. Bush's power took a major hit on November 7th when the Democrats took control of both houses of Congress, and with growing discontent with the White House's policies in Iraq, Iran, North Korea, and on several domestic issues, the Democrats may not be willing to cooperate. So, they're gonna fight like him like cats and dogs now. And also from Monday, Rumsfeld memo, Iraq tactics not working. President Bush said Saturday he wants to hear all advice before making decisions about changes in Iraq strategy. Even as it was disclosed that Rumsfeld called for major changes in tactics 2 days before he resigned as defense secretary. In my view, Rumsfeld said, it is time for a major adjustment, he said in a November 6th memo to the White House. Clearly, what U.S. forces are currently doing in Iraq is not working well enough or fast enough. Oh, he's finally took off those rose-colored glasses, finally, and seeing the real world over there. Existence of the classified memo was first reported by the New York Times on its internet site Saturday evening in a story for the paper's Sunday edition. So, good for him, you know. At least he's speaking the truth now. And he's only the fifth worst president, according to the New York Post on Monday. He's merely the fifth worst. In the White House Hall of Shame, Bush comes behind four other Oval officers whose policies are even more disastrous. Can that be possible? James Buchanan, Andrew Johnson, Richard M. Nixon, and James Madison. The damage must be largely self-inflicted, and there's another test. The damage to the nation must be substantial. Minor blunders and petty crimes do not land a president into the rogues gallery. By contrast, George Walker Bush has inadvertently destroyed not only Baghdad, not Washington, and the costs of the Iraq War in blood and treasure are far less than those of Korea and Vietnam. Yet, Bush will be remembered for the Iraq conflict for generations, long after tax cut-driven deficits, No Child Left Behind, and comprehensive immigration reform are forgotten. The fact that Bush followed the invasion of Afghanistan, which had sheltered al-Qaeda, here we go, with the toppling of Saddam Hussein, will puzzle historians for centuries. It is as though, after Japan had bombed Pearl Harbor, FDR had asked Congress to declare war on Argentina. It's true. I mean, we're going off in this thing. I mean, Osama bin Laden's still over in Afghanistan, and we went off in this excursion into Iraq. I don't know. And why did Bush do it? Did he really believe that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction? What is it about oil, Israel, revenge for Hussein's alleged attempt on Bush's father's life? The war will be joining the sinking of the USS Maine and the grassy knoll among the topics of exercised conspiracy theorists for generations. And the photos of torture at Abu Ghraib will join images of the napalmed Vietnamese girl and executed Filipino rebels in the gallery of U.S. atrocities. Like all presidents, George W. Bush wants to be remembered. He will get his wish as the fifth worst president in U.S. history. So, wow, he even ranks lower than Jimmy Carter, can that be? And then Monday, from the Los Angeles Times, Middle East allies near state of panic over upheavals. President Bush and his top advisors fanned out across the troubled Mideast over the last week to showcase their diplomatic initiatives, in lack thereof, you know what I mean, to restore strained relationships with traditional allies and forge new ones with leaders in Iraq. But instead of flaunting stronger ties and steadfast American influence, the president's journey found friends both old and new near a state of panic. Mideast leaders expressed soaring concern over upheavals across the region that the United States helped ignite through its invasion of Iraq and push for democracy, and fear that the Bush administration may make things worse. President Bush's summit in Jordan with the Iraqi Prime Minister proved an awkward encounter that deepened doubts about the relationship. Cheney's stop in Riyadh, the Saudi capital, yielded a blunt warning from the kingdom's leaders. And Secretary Condoleezza, the girl with the David Letterman smile, Rice's swing through the West Bank in Israel, intended to build Arab support by showing a new U.S. push for peace, and peace found little to work with. No kidding. She played an Arab piano recital for them over there while the bombs were dropping in Lebanon. Visits designed to show the American team in charge ended instead in diplomatic embarrassment and disappointment, with U.S. leaders rebuked and lectured by Arab counterparts. The trips demonstrated that U.S. allies in the region were struggling to understand what to make of the difficult relationship and to figure out whether with a new Democratic majority taking over Congress, Bush even had control over his nation's Mideast policy. So, yeah, really. State of foreign policy in this country is in flames. So hopefully with the Democrats getting control, they can make some sense out of this and have some accountability for this wretched administration. Yeah. And from Monday from the Associated Press, Spy Chief, Iraq more precarious than Vietnam. National Intelligence Director John Negroponte, of all people, says Iraq is far more precarious than much of Vietnam was when he served as U.S. diplomat there in the 1960s. An expert on Vietnam and one-time advisor to former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, Negroponte said he sees more differences than similarities between the two conflicts. In Vietnam, for example, there was a clear enemy given Soviet support for the North Vietnamese. In addition, in Vietnam, the cities were secure. The province capitals were secure. He walked around that capital, that country, as a unarmed civilian for almost 4 years without ever having any serious brushes, he said. In Iraq, even the capital is highly insecure, perhaps one of the most insecure places in the country. Whew. And that's supposed to be the heart of the green zone and where our troops are hunkered down in. Yeah, unbelievable. And then on Monday from CNN, High Court will decide White House funding for faith-based charities. Remember this? The Bush administration's controversial practice of providing federal funds to faith-based religious organizations will be debated before the Supreme Court in a case testing the discretionary spending power of the executive branch. Oral arguments are likely to be heard in late February. A federal appeals court in Washington this year ruled in favor of the group Freedom from Religion Foundation, which filed a lawsuit against the White House. President Bush in 2001 created the Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives to help funnel billions of dollars to select private groups that provide a range of social services, such as feeding and training the homeless and educating underprivileged children. So that's going to be interesting how that plays out. I don't know. The Supreme Court is ruled by the conservatives, so they might just go along with Kiss Bush's ass on this one as well. So we'll see about that. And another thing about this do-nothing Congress, they say what they're remembered for. I think I'll remember them for is this Terry Schiavo disaster when they got involved themselves in a private family issue. And then Bush got himself dragged into that mess, too, just to get slapped down by a district court judge in that mess. Remember that? And also from Monday, Vilsack criticizes McCain on Iraq. With his candidacy only a day old, Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack took aim at the man widely viewed as a Republican frontrunner in the presidential race, Senator John McCain. Vilsack, a Democrat, criticized McCain for calling for more troops in Iraq. His comments came during a radio interview and appearance at the New Hampshire Technical Institute. I fundamentally disagree with Senator McCain on this. I think he is wrong. We can't afford to make a big mistake bigger, he said to a burst of applause at the college. We've stretched our military too thin, and I'm not quite sure where Senator McCain thinks we can get those troops from. Absolutely. Yeah, McCain's he's out of his mind. We don't need more troops over. We need less troops over in Iraq. You know? So, and one more before we take our break. And I'll say, let them eat cake. Or a Yule log or cookies shaped like Barney from Salon.com from the War Room. Tony Snow isn't the only one with a little sensitivity problem. As the president flies back from his summit on the war, the one that will have claimed the lives of more than 3,000 Americans by Christmas, the Office of the First Lady is distributing the menu for this year's White House holiday receptions. Get a little of this. This is what we're not going to be eating, dining on. A display of specialty cheeses and winter fruits, served a bountiful display of lavish specialty crackers and spiced pecans, colossal shrimp cocktail, wow, and Jonah crab claws served with Ramsay's cocktail sauce and spiced romelade, stuffed turkey breasts with winter mushrooms, cheese and brandied cranberries, sugar-cured Virginia ham with hot pepper mustard, served with a warm blue corn muffins. What the hell? Chicken fried beef tenderloin with white onion gravy, herb roasted lollipop, lamb chops served with warm yeast rolls, honey cup mustard sauce, fresh tamales with tomatillo sauce and black beans. Bake with white cheddar, whatever this is. I can't even read. I don't know what this word is. Farfalle, F-A-R-F-A-L-L-E, whatever. Sweet potato souffle, asparagus tear with lemon garlic, and also golden crimson beet salad with orange. fennel, whatever that is, chocolate peppermint cookies with peppermint crunch, and a pecan sandy tree, so with layers of cookies. So it's amazing. It's the menu that we're not going to be receiving from, courtesy of the White House. So, and also, Harris poll finds 68% think there's a civil war in Iraq. It's from the Wall Street Journal. A majority of Americans think Iraq is in the middle of a civil war, a new Harris Interactive poll finds. And few are confident that Robert Gates' nomination as Secretary of Defense will improve the situation there. 68% of U.S. adults said they believe there is a civil war in Iraq. And the poll from November 13th to the 20th found, compared with 14% who disagree and 18% who aren't sure. So it's interesting right there. So, well, we'll take our little break and we'll bring on the commander and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Nancy Pelosi, and I'm going to be your next Speaker of the House. Thank you for that warm welcome. Now, as you know, I've pledged a whole new era of bipartisan cooperation, so I'd like to get to know the audience a little bit tonight. Do we have any Republicans here? Where are they? Applaud? Anybody? There they are in the back there. Now, to both of you, I would like to say thank you. Thank you for taking time off from watching Fox News so that you could be with us this evening. How about Democrats? Do we have any Democrats here tonight? All righty. Now, fellow Dems, let's be gracious. Let's try not to gloat. Oh, who am I kidding? Hit it, maestro! Things look swell. Mary Gaze, raise the terrorist minimum wage. Starting here, starting now, honey. Things run by Pelosi. You got it. Raise the bar. Hybrid cars. NBC will become NPR. Starting here, starting now, honey. Everything's run by Pelosi. I got 6 grandkids. Aren't we damn swell? Soon the White House is mine. Show them well. My running mate will be a stem cell. I'll be grand, feeling great. And I don't have to wait till 08. Since I start third in line, Cheney's heart ain't that fine. And when we impeach George Bush, I guarantee the most powerful. All right, Oprah, but then me.
We are back on Subject to Discussion, once again live on LVRocks.com and S2DRadio.com. And now we'll be joined by Commander Jeff Huber. Commander, are you there, sir?
I am.
Hi, welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Nice little Patriot music there. Hoping you mind that.
Not at all.
So how are you?
I'm very well. It's you getting close to an old man's bedtime out here on the East Coast, but other than that, we're fine. We got my coffee coming. And
there you go. Well, we appreciate you staying up late for us. We know it's late back there on the East Coast, but I tell you, I got a lot of questions from students and stuff for you and everything else, but you got quite the background. Now, I don't mean to jump right in, but the Gates hearings, how did you think those went today?
I think I probably caught about half of those. I guess things were pretty smooth. I think really it was only John McCain who gave him much of a cheese grating, and I thought he handled himself well. He wasn't he didn't get beaten up on too badly. I thought he answered questions about his CIA days okay. And I wasn't real surprised to hear by, I don't know what time it was here on the East Coast, that he got a, what was it, a 21-0 nomination to go to the floor for a vote. So
yeah, that was kind of surprising. I expected some of the Democrats to stand up to him a little bit, Kennedy and Senator Levin, but because Senator Levin voted against him the last time he was up for a post as well.
Yeah. Well, I think, and you've heard a number of other people say it, I think that they, it's only halfway a joke that they needed to get somebody in there to replace Rumsfeld. And really, I would say, particularly in a time of war, you really can't horse around. You need to have a guy in that post, simply because he is the number two guy in the chain of command, and he's really the only guy other than the president who can give orders to somebody like Abizaid. So you need to have a real person in that spot. It's not like, for example, it's not like having John Bolton's deputy do his job, act in his capacity as an ambassador to the UN. You actually have to be the Secretary of Defense to give orders to these four stars who are the unified command commanders.
Now, I'm on your blog right now, which is zenhubert.blogspot.com, and it's I love it a lot. I mean, it's really, you're all over the place, too. I saw you on Daily Coast, right?
Yeah, I posted Coast. I'm also with E Pluribus Media. I'm kind of, that's kind of my, I'm a contributing editor there. Also, if you're my left wing fan,
absolutely,
you'll find me with them.
And on your post on from Monday, you had Fools, Fanatics, and Iraq Lessons Learned. Now, a lot of people, I can't understand that, you know, these lessons, and nobody's learning from these lessons in Iraq. Now, you know, Bush, Rumsfeld, I mean, Rumsfeld finally issued that memo the other day, or it came to light the other day about even he felt there should have been a change in Iraq. You know, these lessons, nobody seems to be learning from these lessons.
No, they don't, and it's really hard to tell. I think from what you hear from the administration publicly, what they really are or are not learning, simply because they. I find that there's just very little genuine candor coming from any of them, and I particularly get discouraged, annoyed. I don't know which word best describes it. When I hear the four stars, most of what they talk about is essentially, you know, the snappy one-liner talking points about how things are going that really they don't quite make sense. pardon me. I think when General Abizaid, for example, supposedly made the comment about if we withdraw, they'll follow us over here, and it's like, well, General, how are they going to get here? You know, they don't have a navy. They don't have an Air Force, and it's too far to jump or swim. And Abizaid knows things like that. Just doesn't quite make sense. I think, too, what was it? Was it was it the end of last week when when NBC finally came out and said, well, we're going to call this a civil war, and within I think an hour, the administration folks are coming back with, well, no, it's not a civil war, and the emphasis all went immediately back to, well, it's Al Qaeda that's fomenting this, and Peter Pace, who, as your listeners probably know, is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs,
mm-hmm.
Went on television and essentially started echoing the same thing. You know, this is an Al Qaeda thing, even though we pretty much, the military itself says Al Qaeda constitutes a very small, you know, a less than 10% of the total of what they think is the people who are fighting there,
mm-hmm.
and is responsible for a tiny fraction of the terror-like attacks.
Yeah,
but Pace is making that announcement. At the same time, he's talking about taking troops out of Anbar province and putting them in Baghdad, when in fact the troops in Anbar province are the only ones who are actually fighting against Al Qaeda in Iraq. You know, these things say, please, it doesn't make sense. Just to stop saying those things. It's embarrassing for me to listen to. So.
Well, it seems like they get these talking points from the administration and from Snow and them, and then the news report's one thing, and then the administration comes out trying to tell you it's a totally different. It's not what you're seeing on TV. Oh, it's great over there. Everything's doing fine. This doublespeak coming out of there is amazing, huh?
Well, yeah. We're not hearing enough good news. Well, there isn't enough good news to report to make up for the rest of it.
Yeah.
Nothing could be good enough.
Well, and they say, two-thirds of the country is fine. Well, there's nobody in two-thirds of the country. It's all desert, you know?
Yeah, and that's really true. And it's, you know, you say these things like that that are, if you just sit down and think about them long enough, you realize that they don't make sense. Well, I'll give you another example, not to let this guy off the hook. George Casey, who's the four-star, who's the essentially he's commander of the Iraq theater under Abizaid, said, I think it was last week, well, you know, our troops have never lost in combat over here. And it's like, well, you know, that's great, but they didn't lose in combat in Vietnam either. That's just a meaningless statement. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why he would, you know, why would you even say a thing like that? Now, those are Vietnam-era guys.
Mm.
And they saw what happened. They've heard all this stuff.
I don't know.
And I'm kind of fond of saying, you know, if you could put that kind of effort into, the kind of effort into winning the war that you put into spinning the war, you probably wouldn't have to spin the war.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. And this is getting back to Gates. Now, you hear a lot of talk about, is the new guy. I think it was Hillary Clinton who essentially questioned, well, now, are you really going to make sure that we see changes, or is this just going to be more talk, or is this just going to be another... plan for victory, or, how many times have we turned the corner and done this, that, and the other thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be listening very closely, because if the talk doesn't change from what we've heard, I think then it'll be pretty pretty telling that, yeah, nothing's really going to change. And I also think it was funny that, now you sent me that email, saying that, you know, that the readers or your listeners would be interested in hearing about, impressions of the Gates hearings. Something I thought that was pretty telling, and I thought it was Gates telling it like it was. Let me see if I've got it here in front of me.
Let me see. I think I have it. Well, he said that we're not in the war over there.
Well, yeah, I was glad to hear him say that, but it's sort of like, okay, well, you know, surprise, surprise, everybody knows that.
Yeah. Well, then he came back later, you know, kind of rectifying. We're not losing it either. We're not winning. We're not losing, or something like that. He came back and corrected himself, huh?
Yeah, but well, you know, what do you expect him to say?
Yeah. Now, is Bush actually going to listen to him, or everybody's saying his head's in the ground, he's like an ostrich, and he's just going to go full bore ahead with this and not listen to anybody?
Well, I don't know. I've given up trying to figure out what's happening between young Mr. Bush's ears. I just and I don't know how to interpret anything he says other than it's. Well, the kind of thing we were talking about before, it's like you almost can't take it seriously because it's all going to be, the basic stuff out of the propaganda playbook.
Yeah.
Now, it's difficult to say what he's really going to think and what he's really going to do. I don't know who he's really going to listen to now. My very strong sense is that between the Baker Commission and the White House's study and the Pentagon study, I've seen this entirely too often, that people are going to essentially tell him things he wants to hear, that nobody's going to bother to to say this is going to get dismissed out of hand. And I'll give you an example. I think probably most of us have heard about the Pentagon study saying the go long, go big, and go home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are the three courses of action. Well, right away, it's really one course of action because the guys at the Pentagon who worked on it themselves. Well, they immediately rejected go home. It is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And the go big was, well, we really can't do that unless we have a draft. So what we're talking about is the go long thing where maybe a surge, maybe a dump. But it really wasn't anything different than what we're already talking about doing now, which is we'll draw down when conditions on the ground allow it. But, when's that going to happen? And what are the metrics or the benchmarks that say that can happen?
Yeah,
I'm more and more convinced that anything that you put together that doesn't have some sort of timelines, at least rough ones, is nothing's ever going to happen.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. Why do we need all these studies? I mean, I'm not a rocket scientist or an Einstein. Yeah, I could look over there and see that it's a mess over there. Why do they need all these studies? I mean, I think it's more cover for the administration to use as a cover, huh?
I think that may well be.
Mm-hmm.
I come back to. What I generally try to do, Sean, is look at this and say, okay, yeah, this looks to me like it could be cover. But regardless of whether it's cover or not, it's like these things really, are they really worth anything? Are they going to accomplish anything? And my strong sense is that no, they probably aren't. I don't think that, and what I'm really not hearing a whole lot of is how they seriously think that they're going to help Maliki pull the unity government together. Now the Stephen Hadley memo that was quote unquote leaked. I just went back and revisited. Pardon me. I just went back and revisited the original New York Times article that covered that, and in fact, I saved it so I could pull it up when
I was speaking with you. And I think that from what you can gather from the article, I think that, first of all, it appears to me that the kinds of things Hadley was addressing were the kinds of things that I would expect Hadley to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's doing his job of saying, hey, we've got some doubts about this guy, what can we do? Now, why this appeared at the particular time it did, just before their Bush and Maliki met in Jordan, I don't know. And I'm, in my mind, the information environment is so corrupted that any time I see anything that was revealed by senior White House officials who remain anonymous on the blah, 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 I have to consider the possibility that this was perfectly leaked for one reason or another.
Yeah, it could have been leaked for Maliki to get some backbone over there, huh?
Yeah, for him to get some backbone, and you know, there's always the I think usually too, there's the domestic audience in mind, which is no matter what Mr. Bush says, keep in mind that you know, we're putting pressure on this guy, or at least to give that impression. And really, when you get down to it, this is another one of these non-news stories. Now, we've been hearing about displeasure with Maliki and Karzai telling him, has been telling him offline that, hey, your time is limited. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. The another thing about that, this is supposedly this memo was classified secret, which I'm pretty sure the guy who wrote it is Michael Gordon. I'm pretty sure when he says classified secret, he knows what he's talking about. Be worth going over that just a little bit for your listeners,
sure.
You think, when they see something that's classified or it's secret. Short version, there are, when you have a classified thing or classified document, there are three basic levels of classification. Lowest level being confidential, and then higher than that is secret. The very highest is top secret. Now, there are other categories of classifications, compartmentalized things. But by and large, I wouldn't say this is always the case, but probably most of the time, if you have a document that is classified secret, not all of it is secret. In fact, many classified documents have large parts of them that are completely unclassified. Mm. And typically every section, every paragraph of a classified document will be marked with the classification of what that particular bit or blurb of information is.
Mm.
So an overall document will receive the classification of the most highly classified section of the document. So you may see something that is from a secret document, but in fact, what you're hearing from the secret document is unclassified.
Mm.
So I have a tough time telling, when I read those kinds of things, what was really classified in this. And the sorts of things that that are described in the New York Times article, I've got a feeling that they were unclassified, and that's why why they were purposely leaked. And when people go out and tell genuinely classified things to the press, they really are taking a walk on the wild side. So, you know,
that's very interesting.
I don't know how much of this was staged.
Yeah.
Just a piece of a theater, both for the international and the domestic audience.
Interesting. I have a question. A question for you from a mother of a member of the armed forces over there in Iraq, and she wants to know how will the change from Rumsfeld to Gates affect the troops on the ground? Hello, did you hear me?
I think that probably. I don't think, in terms of their day to day. Lives, it'll change a whole heck of a lot. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before with Gates. What's going to change things for troops on the ground is what they decide or don't decide to do with the strategy. It may be that some of the commanders in the field will be able to start doing better things tactically and operationally. But people like Jack Jacobs, the retired. Colonel, who is MSNBC, one of MSNBC's primary analysts, military analysts. He, by and large, I'd say he's about the straightest shooter of all those guys who, you know, make money talking about the war on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back from Iraq and says, hey, you know, the morale is pretty good. And I can believe that. And he says, you know, and that's really kind of how it goes. Most of my experience of being deployed is on a Navy ship. But kids are out there, and folks are out there, and they're busy. And by and large, you kind of stay focused. We do a pretty good job for most people now, giving them. You know, some kind of decent distraction, entertainment. They've got a good chow. So I don't think there'll be a whole heck of a lot of difference just in terms of the sort of moment-to-moment, day-to-day life for the average soldier and Marine. And actually, now there's quite a few... Navy and Air Force folks on the ground in Iran now, or in Iraq now. The big thing is going to be, what are the big changes going to be in the strategy, if any, and we'll just have to see what really comes out from that.
Well, Commander Huber, we have to let you go at the end of our segment with you. Thank you very much for being on. That's quite fascinating.
Okay.
And we'll check you out at zenhuber.blogspot.com, sir.
Alrighty.
And we thank you very much for making time for us at this late hour. I do appreciate it. I know all the listeners do as well. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks an awful lot for having me.
And we'll have you on again soon, and have a happy Merry Christmas.
You too. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. Have a good night, sir. Bye. And that was Commander Huber of the Pen and Sword blog over at zenhuber.blogspot.com. And we'll take a break, and when we return, we'll have Dr. Koenig Rules, Professor Koenig Rules, to talk about the Galactica and Who episodes from last week. And then following him in the second hour, our pop culture hour, will be Dr. Annette Ranger, who is the from MediaBoulevard.com with our pop culture discussion. And we'll be right back in just a few minutes.
knee-deep in the hoopla, sinking in your fight. Too many runaways eating up the night. Marconi plays the bamba, listen to the radio. Don't you remember? We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. Someone always playing corporation games. Who cares? They're always changing corporation names. We just want to dance here. Someone stole the stage. They call us irresponsible. Write us off the page.
Shoppers, I'm Kim Cattrall with a fashionable way to be philanthropic. The 34th annual Posh Sale, the hottest sale in town. Posh benefits Lighthouse International, which helps people of all ages overcome the challenges of vision loss. Here's two ways you can help. By shopping May 10th through the 14th to get the best deals in town, by donating your new or gently used designer goods now. Find out more at lighthouse.org. I'll see you there.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
Humans remain entertained until the end.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com as well as podcasted. Thank you for everybody joining us live. And, of course, everybody in the chat room, Darth Hamster, Giorgio, Invincor, Moto Psycho, Mr. Ron, Net Ranger, and myself. And a big debate going on in the chat room over the ratings from Heroes and Galactica. So now we'll be joined by the crazy professor, Professor Koenig Rules. There he comes.
This should wake you up.
Uh-oh.
It's put you to sleep.
There we go. And here he comes, Professor Koenig Rules. How are you there, sir?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Just fine. How are you doing?
Oh, you sound very good this week. Last week you sounded like you were in the alternate Earth.
Yes, well, I'm glad you sent me an email earlier tonight because I would have forgotten all about tonight.
Uh-oh, yes, you're very you're very busy, Professor.
Well, I don't want to contribute to your low ratings, so, you know.
My low rate. What are you talking about? This is the most podcasted program on LV Rocks, I think. I don't know. I think Leroy's line might be beating me, but that's only temporary until the football season's over. Then their ratings plunge.
That's the Leroy Sports Hour.
Oh, whatever it is. One of those damn shows. Whoever Leroy is. Where is Leroy?
Hey, you give your picks, and you might get more listeners.
The Bears by 12 this week.
All right.
And the Patriots by 6. It's like that. When there's one radio show out here called MeatandPotatoes.com. Joe Scandiano, whatever the hell his name is. He does a horrible sports show. He's on 5 days a week for 2 hours. And MeatandPotatoes.com, whatever the hell his website is. So anyway, welcome to the program.
Good. But so did you like unfinished business, or did you think it was finished business?
Actually, no. I liked it. It was better than I thought it was going to be. I think it was going to be some hokey, you know, boxing episode like they did on the old series with the basketball and all that with the pyramid game. I actually liked it. It was surprisingly good.
Yeah, I thought Adama beating up Tiro for a while there was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Beat the hell out of him.
He got beat up.
Yeah, he beat the hell out of him. I think he beat the hell out of him because Tiro's been on my program so many times. He gave him a couple good licks for.
God damn it! Never be on Subject to Discussion again.
And that damn radio show. Here's a shot in the lip for you.
Did you say Mr. Ron was in the chat room? Mm-hmm. You don't mean Mr. Ron Moore, do you?
Oh, I do not know. I know there's somebody in the chat room, Mr. Ron 6689. So I'm not sure.
6689.
Yes. But I liked it. They did some flashbacks like they did what went on, you know, for that year they were on the planet.
It was good. It was good, though. I still don't understand why Starbuck married Anders night after she made love to Lee.
Yeah, that was
pretty bad. No wonder he's pissed at her. I'd be pissed at her too. What a
how about that scene on that?
Just for that. I wouldn't be surprised if they killed her off in episode 16.
Oh. You're not supposed to understand she's a woman.
My lord. But that scene was pretty intense with her and Starbuck on, or her and a, her and Starbuck, her and a, Apollo on their lot that she was going to build her house on.
They were naked.
He got up and he says, I'm in love.
There was a little bit of sex there, Sean, you know?
Yeah, and he gets up and says, I'm in love with Kara Thrace, and then she finally gets up and says she's in love with Lee Adama. I thought that was
Smith. Yeah, and then she marries Anders. Boy, slut.
I think she was afraid.
I'm sorry.
I think she was afraid of of her love for Apollo.
Now you're thinking, well, you know what? She deserved what she got when the
right, and
Cylons.
She deserves what she'll get in episode 16.
Wow.
Wait a second. Wait a second.
No.
You didn't hear it here.
I don't want to know what happens in episode 12 or 16, whatever the hell it is. Now, how about...
The censors are back.
There you go.
See, I want to raise your ratings up before the holiday.
Yeah. Now, how about...
Okay.
Yeah. How about Adama and Rosalind? Now, do they have sex on that planet?
No.
Uh-oh.
They're warning you to watch with the spoilers.
But yeah. Rosalind has the hots for Adama.
Oh, yeah, you can tell.
No doubt about it. And Adama just looks at her like, what do I do with her, you know?
Yeah.
Is he gay?
Who? Adama?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't know. But
maybe they used his sperm in a test tube. I don't know.
Oh, jeez. And we went another episode without seeing. Was Baltar in it at all? Was he?
Well,
no.
Baltar was in it. Remember with the shovel?
Oh yeah,
ceremony?
Yeah.
He's very. He was in it for about 2 or 3 minutes.
Yes,
remember?
Yeah, briefly in the episode.
Very briefly.
And no Boomer either.
Right.
No Boomer.
No Boomer.
And then
right.
Poor Colonel Ty was the referee in all these fights.
Yeah, well, you only,
give
well,
him something to do. Yeah. Have him be the ref. Starbuck knocked out Hot Dog.
Right.
You know? So his image is going to take a shot being beat up by a girl, huh?
That's right. Hey, you know what? Adama sounds a little bit... Have you ever seen any of the Saw movies?
What?
Or no?
No.
Have you ever seen any of the Saw horror movies?
Yeah.
Because Adama sounds a lot like Jigsaw.
Really?
In the Saw movies.
Huh.
He whispers a lot.
Really?
He sounds like the Godfather, you know?
Well,
anyway.
I like that last speech he gave up, you know, came up at the end, how he's been, you know, kind of lax on the ship and everything else.
Yeah, no more.
No more. He's going to be a hard ass now.
And it sounds like, my God, sounds like he's getting ready for the show to get canceled, doesn't it?
No, I don't think it's
his final speech before the cancellation.
No, he's not. I don't think the show's going anywhere because they're going to move it to Sundays and it's
going to. It's going to Sundays, didn't you?
Yes.
You told me that, right?
Yes, it's going to shoot up in ratings on Sundays.
Oh, by the way, news on Babylon 5. They are already filming the first of the Babylon direct-to-DVD movies, and Bruce Boxleitner is already doing some scenes.
Huh. Well, I mean, they must not be going to have Jerry Doyle in it because he's doing his...
It doesn't sound like it. Tracy Scoggins, who played his ex-wife, is going to be in it too. But
Did they finish off that series?
Like Jerry Doyle was in it.
Yeah, because he's still doing a show here down the street.
Did they finish off Babylon
5? Really? What show is that?
Yeah, they finished off Babylon 5.
Is he the one that plays the musical instrument on Street Corners for Change? No.
He's doing quite well. He's got a nationally syndicated radio show. I'm not going to piss him off.
No, didn't they finish off Babylon 5?
Yeah, didn't they finish it off?
What?
Didn't they finish off that show?
When the TV series was on.
Well, they destroyed the space station 20 years into the future, they could still focus on it for a number of years with it. So they could still do shows, and probably they will. You know?
Now, how about
movies?
Now, how about that Doctor Who episode from Friday? That was outstanding.
I liked it, but I wish Satan talked. You know, in the pit, it was a little bit of a letdown because all the creatures, the were talking, and that guy who was possessed was talking, and then when Doctor Who gets in the pit, all it does is snarl. You know, but it was good.
That makes sense because his intellectual Satan left the pit.
Yeah,
but a physical being.
Yeah. I guess.
I thought what's her name was going to die in this episode.
No, they preluded what's going to happen to her though, because that
oh yeah,
he said
oh, yeah,
that she's going to die
gonna
in battle.
Die.
Yeah.
Rose. Is she going to die? Will she die? I don't know, but probably the Daleks and the Cybermen will be in the final episode.
Yes.
How many is left in this season?
Four. Is there four episodes left? That was their ninth. They got four.
I think there's three. Or four episodes left, so I think what they're going to do is probably show the two-parter, maybe the back to back, you know, to complete it. Either Galactica ends early and Who goes a little bit later, but
what is Galactica?
Who might go a little bit later than
Galactica's
Galactica
taking some time off
back to back.
Well, Galactica's taking some time off in a couple of weeks, right? And then
well, it's already at episode, isn't it? At episode 9 or 10 of the season.
I think they got one more, and then they're taking a break until the end of January.
Then they'll show the Who's and wrap up with the Who's.
Now, but, a question for you from the chairman, from LaRoque.
Yes.
LaRoque is asking, ask Koenig if Geno is going to get canceled from low ratings.
No, Geno will get canceled for low ratings.
Yeah.
Geno will get canceled when Edward James almost can't do those speeches anymore.
And and Vince is saying there's four episodes left, but they're showing the last two on the same night. So only three.
Right, Doctor Who, right?
Only three more episodes, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and then, what else?
But Geno is not going to get canceled,
no.
I mean, because if it was, you would have at least heard about preparations to do a finale type of episode. So my guess is the move to Sunday nights is to just beef up ratings so that it's back to the 1.6, the 1.8, and then it'll be fine. It'll be fine. So, you know.
Well, and actually Rose asked, well, the Doctor actually ends up falling and bumping into the TARDIS, so he gets the TARDIS back, right?
That's right.
And then,
gets Rose back.
And Rose back, because Rose thought she lost the Doctor and all that. And then at the end
of it, the Doctor never admits, though, that is Satan, the real deal, does he?
No, he doesn't admit it.
He never admits it, so you never know quite whether he believes in this or he doesn't.
Well, then she...
Well, you know, because he scoffs at the creature existing before time. He said, time.
Yeah.
What does that mean, before time? You know,
I don't
know. Can that be? You know. So.
Well, then she asked him, you know, about what her, you know, with the creature saying that she's in a dying battle, if it's true or not. And he says no. He just, you know, he just made it up and everything. So the Doctor probably has an idea that it's true, but he doesn't want to tell her that, right?
Right. But you know, it would be real cool based on what they did with Doctor Who if they did a Battlestar Galactica story about the two. You know, like they did with Count Ibley in the original.
Oh,
I still think it would be cool to do at least a one episode or a two-parter about some evil satanic influence that they encounter, you know?
They
talk about a god. They talk about a Cylon god, but what happens if the Cylon god is really the devil, or if they have a devil in their mythology, too, you know?
Well, that would be interesting, but, I don't know, that might require... It's too much special effects. Yeah, maybe too much like the old show.
Too much special effects, right. I mean, and it wouldn't fit with the boxing, right? Unless put the devil in a boxing ring.
Does it seem like...
And the Dama battles it, right?
That would be funny.
Does it seem like this season of Battlestar, there's more... Than season one? No, there's more like going in the past, kind of how Lost does. Like they show current time, and then they go... They go in the past, and then they come back to the present time.
Like it was. I thought it was pretty cool that they brought back Ellen.
Yes.
Ellen tied for a couple brief minutes. So
it was good.
That's what Lost is doing, but Lost does that almost like
every
week.
That's the part of their show. But I'm just saying, Battlestar's kind of doing that, and doing the what was it 2 weeks ago when they had the episode where they actually show that it was probably Adama's fault that these
with Bulldog
that was the show
good too.
That generated the lowest ratings of all time for Battlestar.
Are you kidding? What
1.3.
What'd they get last week?
I don't know.
No.
But it can't go much further down than that, right?
It's terrible. Now,
As soon as they put it on Sunday, it'll go up to like 3 watch.
Yeah, and then a question for you from Giorgio.
Yes.
Did you like, I don't know if you listened to the podcast, did you like the roundtable from Ron Moore's podcast? I don't listen to the podcast, so I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, I didn't either, so. Sorry, Giorgio,
Sorry.
Sorry. Well, does that mean I'm off next week because I didn't hear the podcast?
No, I don't listen to it either, so we're both off the show next week.
So we're both off.
No, I don't listen to it either because a lot of that stuff, I don't, Yeah, I like being in an imaginary world of Galactica. I don't need to hear how we had to cut this scene and cut that scene. Let me watch the damn episode. You know, thank you very much.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So what about Heroes? Have you been watching Heroes?
Oh, now I thought it was very good last night. Huh? Or
oh
yes.
Yeah, especially that cliff ender. You know, in terms of who's responsible for the destruction of the city.
Yes.
For the bomb.
Yeah, that was the Cylons, right? They're responsible.
No, I think it was Adama.
Did Adama start that
yeah,
too?
Yeah, Adama came to Earth and led them there, you know?
Oh, damn him. Adama's a troublemaker all over the place. Now, now I saw Eccleston's going to be on there, huh?
Eccleston's going to be on Heroes?
Yes, he's joining
Heroes?
The...
Heroes?
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's going
wait
to...
Wait a minute. Are you pulling my leg?
No, it's all over the place. Where the hell
Eccleston
is this thing?
He's going to be on Heroes?
Yeah,
he's going to show up in a blue box.
In a blue box.
Oh, stop.
With a dog called K-9.
Stop.
No, he's really... Seriously, he's going to be on Heroes.
His superpowers? He's going to be able to stop time by touching his index fingers together. Oh, wait. That was already done.
Yeah, let me see. No, he's going to be on.
But, Jesus. You know what? One thing about Heroes I don't understand. Well, there's a couple of things I don't understand. If they have to save the cheerleader to save the world, then it sounds to me like after what you saw last night, mm-hmm. it has nothing to do with the cheerleader, does it?
No. Well, no, they
said... It has to do with another... of the heroes that leads to the destruction of the world or whatever, right?
Yeah, actually, I got this. This is from Gallifrey 1. Christopher Eccleston on Heroes on TV.
What?
Yeah, he said the Ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston, has joined the cast of NBC's Heroes. Eccleston's going to...
Are you kidding?
No.
This is for real, right?
Yeah, he's going to play Claude, a man who can't become invisible, says us.
Wait. This is not... A joke,
no,
right?
It's serious. Eccleston, the Doctor Who from the blah, 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 is joining the cast in January in a really super role. Although this hasn't been confirmed yet, it fits in with the recent news that Eccleston has been over in the United States seeking work. So he's going to be on Heroes.
See,
and you know what? They don't have to pay him as much if he's invisible.
See, it would have been so much better... I think if they made it where his superpowers was to stop time, that would be killer.
They could have had him be the hero,
yeah.
And no pun intended,
yeah.
Hero character, right?
Because imagine him from Doctor Who stopping time.
Yeah.
People would go nuts
on that.
That's
right.
They say Darth Hamster is saying that Eccleston's going to be an invisible man who will mentor Peter on the show, Peter Petrelli.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. As we say in Doctor Who, that's fantastic.
It was a good episode. I liked the Who episode
last week.
Now, this week, what's coming up this week on Who?
Well, surprisingly, I didn't see these last episodes.
Wow.
So these are going to be new for me. So, they have one of the characters from the BBC series, Hustle. He's going to be... In this week's episode. So for those who have been watching Hustle on AMC, which is an excellent series about con artists in England, one of the characters, the young guy, is going to be starring in it. So,
This week's episode is Fear Her. It's called apparently set in 2012 in London.
Yes,
this coming episode. So it should be interesting. And then, of course, they're all building up for Rose to leave the series. And then this week.
Oh, new thing. Silver Screen Records has a CD of the first two seasons of Doctor Who's music.
Huh.
And if you go on the buysoundtracks.com website, you can get the CD. It's $2 off for $12.95.
Hmm.
The music from the first two seasons, and the music of Doctor Who's pretty good. So,
just
thought I should plug in something for Doctor Who CD.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I was wrong. False information. This week's is Love and Monsters is this week. Pardon me.
Right.
Yes.
That's the one. But that's the one with the guy from Hustle. So.
Yeah. So. And then, getting back to Galactica, I'll be able to talk about Galactica. I like this thing between Adama and what's her name? Laura Roslin on the planet. Those were good flashback scenes. And now, did they actually, you know, get together? No, they're just laying down, looking up at the stars.
I don't think they had sex.
No.
But Laura certainly has the hots for him.
Adama. Yeah, she does.
I mean, and she sort of seems like, bother me. I want to punch someone in the boxing ring, you know?
I like those scenes when Adama was beating the hell out of Tiro when they flashback where he wanted to, you know, get off of the ship to have, give her, you know, so Callie can have the baby on the planet. And Adama said no. And then he turned around, later he had a, he changed his mind.
He tried to beat the crap out of the chief, but instead the chief sort of beats the crap out of him,
And they hit him a bloody mess. And then I like how
pretty bloody.
And I like how Rosalind got in there and tried to give him pointers, give him a left hook and all that. That was pretty
good.
Yeah,
go on, give him a left hook. Come on.
I mean, it's nice because you saw the characters a little differently than you normally would.
I thought the sporting event was pretty good as a backdrop for the past story. I didn't think it was going to be all that great episode with the coming attractions, but I thought it was pretty good, and it's very character driven. You didn't need special effects that particular week, to run the episode.
Yeah, so. Maybe it'll save up the budget for the season finale or something like that, huh?
But it's going to be interesting now how Lucy Lawless, I think, is going to change and become more a god type of figure in the next couple episodes, because she has to go stark raving nuts if they're going to box her entire. Her entire motto. So, I mean, she has to be going nuts in the next couple weeks.
Now. Yeah, and of course, and then Monday is the big premiere of The Lost Room. Now, they've been promoting the hell out of that show. That looks pretty interesting, The Lost Room. This
with
comb.
Objects that can change, one can change time, another.
That
sounds pretty good. I'm wondering, because Ron Moore was supposed to be doing a couple sci-fi pilots and series for the Sci-Fi Channel, whether The Lost Room is one of the projects, because it was supposed to involve people going into a room and discovering all these objects with strange powers. And The Lost Room sort of sounds like that, so I'm wondering if this is one of Ron Moore's babies. Yeah. This miniseries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like, well, they say this is a like they did with Galactica. They're going to throw it out there as a miniseries, and if enough people watch it, they'll bring it back as a series.
And then it can do a 1.3, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is different. A comb that could do something. Maybe they'll have a paperclip that can, fly a plane or something. Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, it's like
I think, though, that pairing Galactica with the Dresden Files will almost give it, like, a new life, I mean, because the Dresden Files seems like it's going to be somewhat funny, but also somewhat dark, too. So you need a dark show to almost complement Galactica, And I'm not sure what they're going to put on Fridays, though.
I think Painkiller Jane will take over in the Galactica spot.
Really?
Yes.
With who, or, well, who's going to be gone then? So.
Yeah, I don't know.
It would be nice if they bring Torchwood.
Oh, well, good luck getting that on there.
And I know.
Now, this week's Galactica is The Passage. Now, they're finally starting to address the issue of the running out of food in the fleet. And then,
so they start eating Commander Adama, right?
No.
Or that's how Lee lost all his weight.
I don't know. No, it's the Galactica pilots must guide the starving fleet through danger to a new food source. So that they're finally starting to address the food. They did the thing with the water, and then they did the thing with the telium, and now they're addressing the thing with they're running out of food. And everybody's like,
I wish they would bring back Richard Hatch.
Yeah.
Because apart from the first couple episodes, he doesn't seem to be in it at all,
Yeah, at least we saw Anders a little bit this week, and then
a little bit.
And that last scene with Starbuck and Apollo kind of, I think they felt like the Anders and all of them knew it was like they're boxing, but it's like those two are having sex up there in the boxing room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what'd be great?
That's my analogy of that situation. Go ahead.
I said, you know what'd be great?
What?
They brought back the original Baltar.
Oh, he's dead.
Is he?
Yeah, he passed away. John Calicos.
That would be great.
Where have you been?
It would be great if they brought him back.
That would be fantastic.
That'd be a ratings grabber for sure.
Or you know what? They should bring back the original Adama.
Oh,
Isn't he heavy, dead too?
Heavy.
Or at least his toupee.
Oh.
How about Dirk Benedict?
Oh, yeah, they could bring him back. They could bring him back.
He's not dead yet.
Terry Carter. They could bring back the original Colonel Ty.
I think they should bring Dirk Benedict back.
How about the original?
Athena. Bring her back. She's gonna be working for work.
What's his name?
Well, Cassiopeia looks pretty hot. Loretta Spang.
Cassiopeia?
And she has expressed an interest in being on the show.
What about what's his face?
Who? Which one? What's his face?
Turned him into Marina Sirtis has expressed an interest.
Turned his character into a chick?
He's going to try to find
Benedict,
a spot for her in season 4.
Oh, Boomer.
Boomer. Boomer. What about Boomer?
Herb Jefferson Jr. I don't know.
Is he one?
I don't know.
Or what about Athena and Cassiopeia? That would be great,
Now, what about the, because that scene I got, like I said, going back to that, I thought where Starbuck and Apollo were kind of, holding, clenching and all that. It's like the boxing match was like they're kind of a obscure reference to them two having sex. You know what I'm saying? What do you think about that?
Yes, I definitely saw that there was a lot of feeling there between them, and you could see Anders then just took off, remember? Mm-hmm. He leaves, and Dee is just looking up at them. So my guess is one of those marriages is going to end up in a divorce, probably.
Oh, interesting.
They got divorce lawyers on the Battlestar too now?
they got divorce.
Maybe they have Netflix. Some of the judges that they have every day on those goofy judge shows,
Judge Milian.
Judy.
Judge Milian.
Yeah, Judge Judy.
Make him a robot one like they did on Doctor Who with the Anne from
If they were smart, they'd have all the judges on one of the ships. And when they jump to light speed, they give them the wrong coordinates.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
I think that episode would earn a 2.5 if they had
whatever.
Judge Judy.
Whatever. So I really wish they would do more episodes set in the fleet, though. I think that'd be interesting. If they're going to try and save money in the budget, you could bring in some day players, someone to have them do a episode set in the fleet, maybe with Racetrack or Leah Karen's character and all that. They could do that. I wish, because they said a year or two ago that they're going to focus more in the fleet.
Right.
Yeah, I wish they would, because I think there's stories to be told in the fleet, right?
Speaking of which, how are you doing with getting people on the show?
Please. Change it. How about your Ron Moore interview?
Okay.
That's a sore subject with me. Okay. No, I don't know. I give up on sci-fi because I remember they offered me Alessandro Giuliani in January when it was like August. I'm like, I'm not waiting, 4 or 5 months to interview with him. You know what I'm saying? So,
right. Well, maybe you can get on their payroll or something.
Please.
You could say, hey, I promoted wrestling before. I can help you out,
I am responsible for changing the Galactica time slot to Sundays, though.
That's right. That's right. You should put out a full-page ad in Variety.
Well, you pay for
Sean O'Mac.
You pay for it, and I'll do it.
For Galactica's time. Change,
We'll put a little CD on there with no nothing on it, and it'll be all the old interviews with Katie Sackhoff. How about that?
The Galactica CD bootleg version. Nothing's on it.
Yeah, well, I think Katie would come on. I know Aaron Douglas would, but I hate to keep
show. My prediction is that after episode 16, you probably will be able to get Katie on for a long time to come.
Oh no! She might be a regular. You mean she might be interested in being a co-host?
I hear she's looking
for Well, Koenig, we'll have to rev up the TARDIS for you. We got Dr. Net Ranger hanging in the wings there. When are you returning to Media Boulevard?
Soon, I guess. I can't get on. It's sort of like I can only get on through MSN Explorer, or Internet Explorer.
All right.
I can't get on MSN, but I'll be there, be on next week.
Yes, you will, Koenig.
Okay.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
And off you go. Dr. Koenig rules. Mad Professor takes off to back to the cold wintry depths of Chicago. And in a moment, we're joined by Dr. Net Ranger, the mad rocket scientist of the program. And he'll be on to talk about all things pop culture. And we'll see what's going on with that. But, you know, I like Galactic. Everybody knows that, of course. I mean, hell, I've been talking about the series since January of 05. So, I mean, it's going to be almost 2 years. Good. It's moving the series this Sunday. And I like the, I said, surprisingly, I liked the most recent episode, the boxing episode. And it gave some flashbacks. We know some of the things that happened down on the planet in that year. And, yeah, it was good to see. So now we know a little bit of reason why, or more some reason why the Starbuck and Apollo were on such bad terms. I think really she went to Anders because she was felt safe. It was a safe relationship, whereas with Lee, I think she really feels an attachment of love for him. And maybe she's afraid of losing him or afraid of, you know, she's always referred to herself as a screw-up. So maybe she was afraid of screwing up a relationship with him. So, and then, you know, and what the hell is this? TV Guide is going to present the Battlestar Galactica season finale, mid-season finale 3 at a movie theater near you. So we'll see about this. I haven't seen this before. Let's see, blah, blah, blah. An exclusive opportunity for TV Guide readers to be one of the first to see the mid-season finale of Sci-Fi Channel's Battlestar Galactica. Watch the episode on the big screen before it airs free at your local Landmark Theater. Wow. So we're going to air the mid-season finale in a theater screen. Wow. The mid-season finale is going to be called the Eye of Jupiter. While working on the algae planet, Tyrol discovers the Temple of Five, reputed to be the home of the Eye of Jupiter, which will guide the ones who discover it to Earth. His report is intercepted by the Cylons, who request a meeting with Adama and Laura. The proposal: let us have the Eye, and we'll let you have, we'll let you leave unharmed. Adama's counterproposal: make any move to take the Eye, and we'll nuke the planet. Ooh. The Cylons bring another piece of news. Sharon and Hilo's baby is alive, but not well. Sharon is initially skeptical, but when Adama confirms that Laura hid the baby at her school, she and Tyrol begin to make plans to rescue her. So it sounds like it's going to be a one hell of a cliffhanger. Let's see. The Cylons launch a fleet of raiders bound for the LJ planet, forcing Adama to show he's not bluffing. Ooh, so so anyway, they're going to show the mid-season finale at movie theaters across the country before it airs on the Sci-Fi Channel. So far, there's only 5 cities. Of course, it's not Vegas. Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, L.A., New York City, and St. Louis. So, interesting. So with that, we'll bring on Dr. NetRanger with our from MediaBoulevard.com with our pop culture discussion. And Dr. NetRanger, are you there, sir, from Media Boulevard?
Yes, John, how's it
going? Oh, very good. I was reading a story about the mid-season Galactica finale going to be in the movie theaters, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Theaters, but...
Yeah. And all hell's going to break loose on this algae planet, apparently. The Cylons, Adama's going to show he's not bluffing about nuking the whole planet. So, whoa, that's going to be some kind of a cliffhanger that's going to be, huh?
Yeah, sounds pretty good. Too bad they're doing such a limited release. So,
yeah.
I mean, you'd think that would be a way to get some viewers in.
Yeah, well, maybe they're hoping that the people that go see it in the theater will tell them, my God, you got to watch this episode, blah, 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 and it'll spread the word of mouth, will boost the ratings, you know?
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. So, and how was your week?
I was good. Good. I'm finally back home after a couple weeks on the road.
So. Oh, yes. Yeah, so you've been traveling. How was the visit to the Galactica set in Vancouver? Were you thrown out?
Didn't quite make it up there.
Oh, I saw it. You didn't use the subject of discussion to get your way in?
Yeah, I was going to mention your name when I got to the set, but
yes.
Somehow I heard that wouldn't be a
that
good
gotten
sure,
you
sure way to get security, though.
Good way to get arrested, and you would have been waterboarded if you would sent you off to Abu Ghraib.
The Cylon Centurion come out and
there you go. And the first little bit of now, this thing with that prison break star, what in the world's going on? What was he doing with these teenagers in the car anyway?
I don't know. That's an interesting story.
I didn't hear that.
What's
about that?
Oh, no. My God. There's what's his name? Lane Garrison.
Which one's that guy?
He's the blonde guy on Prison Break, right? What's his
young kid, Tweener.
Tweener?
I saw his character a couple weeks ago, but over the weekend there was apparently an accident, and they aren't telling who was driving, or they don't know who was driving, but... he's 26 years old. He played a teenager on the show.
Yeah.
He was with, I guess, 3 other teenagers, a 17-year-old.
Hit a tree.
No, I'm trying to think which character. So this is not a main character.
No, well, he was. Tweener. He was the kid. I mean, he was kind of a main character.
Oh, he's one of the fugitives. He got caught.
Yeah.
He got a ride with that one chick from the state college or whatever, and she was driving there in the hotel, and he thought she was going to give him up, and she didn't. I forgot what happened to his character.
He got killed. Mahoney caught him and was taking him in, and then made him get out of the car and just shot him.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So he got busted. How old is he?
He's 26. Yeah.
And he was with what?
A bunch of teenagers in his SUV. And he,
how old?
Like 17, 18.
What state? Because, you know, some states it's legal, 16 or over. I'm just saying. Yeah, some states, 16 or over is legal.
Yeah, what state was it? Do we know?
I think it was California, but I'm not sure. But, anyway, I guess there was a pretty bad accident in the car, and one of the kids got killed.
Killed in the accident. 17-year-old kid, he's gone. If his character's not killed off, it will be next week. All right.
Yeah, he did about three episodes. I guess about three or four episodes back, they killed off his character. So
wait. So they kill off his character before this happened?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it's not like Lost, where you get in a car accident or get arrested for DUI and they kill you off.
Yeah, and you know what? Some people didn't hint on that, and I'm surprised a lot of bloggers didn't mention it. Maybe they did, not that I read, but the same two chicks in Lost, Michelle Rodriguez and the blonde,
that
got arrested for drunk driving. They killed them off on the same episode, which obviously is not, to me, one, is ironic. Two, no, I'd say they killed them off because they got...
Yeah, in trouble.
Actually,
with the
happened
law.
Again this year. The black guy, Mr. Echo, on the show.
Oh,
he got arrested for a DUI and then got killed.
And they killed him. So Lost producers are saying, you know what? You get busted for DUI, we're killing you off.
Yeah.
Well, they say there's no connection, but three cast members has happened to.
Wow.
So.
Well, I mean, we'll see what happens with that. Now, Eva Longoria, she's finally going to get engaged to her basketball player boyfriend, huh?
Right, Tony Parker. They've been together for I guess about 2.5 years now, and they. Finally announced that this week, so big there for them.
Well, because I told her, I'm sorry, I'm not going to marry her, no matter how much money she offers me. I'm sorry. You know, I'm holding out for Katie Sackhoff. I hate to break it to her.
Yeah, I read that in the press release. She had mentioned Sean O'Mac.
A budding radio talk show host.
Sean, you just need to get a good PR person.
PR firm, a liposuction, facelift, hair replacement, the whole nine yards. Sponsored by MediaBoulevard.com, right? No?
We'll take up collections.
Yeah. And then Lindsay, here's a girl for me. Lindsay Lohan attending AA meetings. She's right up my alley. Yeah. Only way I'll get one is if she's drunk, right?
Well, I don't know. You know, a couple six packs might be able to skip that liposuction.
I can't believe she's still getting acting gigs with her attitude and her. She's always. I hear stories. She's late to the set and she's unprepared and all this stuff. I mean, she's still getting acting gigs. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we interviewed her. I guess over the summer when Prairie Home Companion came out, and she said that the partying was just rumors. It wasn't true.
Oh.
But, apparently, that's maybe not the case. But it's kind of interesting. The publicist is really concerned. I guess they decided to go ahead and release this, but they're really concerned that she's going to be outed about which one she's going to, and I have the paparazzi stalking her. But I guess it's they say it's really good for her, and she's doing well with the program, so good for her getting some help there.
Interesting. Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, that seems she lives in that Chateau Marmont or something like that in L.A. And there was a story somewhere I read where she walked into some actors, a lot of actors apparently live in this hotel, and the one guy, I forget his name, on Spider-Man, he played the son of, in the first movie, the son, not the villain, but the son, you know, what the hell his name is. And then somehow she got a key to his room, just walked in his room one morning or something like that. She's like, good Lord. I mean, hope she gets the help, I mean, that she needs. And that's this hotel where she's staying in L.A. Apparently she had one room, but all the junk she collected, clothes and all that. So, you know, she's going to be having like four rooms in that hotel. So,
yeah.
And
sure she could afford it.
Yeah.
You're getting the help. I mean, yeah, you get people like Mel Gibson that kind of, they don't get the help until they do something really incredibly stupid. And it's good to see, somebody young like that trying to do something. So.
Yeah. And somebody's asking me about the Galactica Theater finale. The closest in California is going to be at the Westside Pavilion Cinema in Los Angeles, Thursday, December 14th. It's going to be airing in L.A. Nothing here in Vegas. Chicago is going to be at the Century Center Cinema and 2828 North Clark Street in Chicago. So a little update there on the Galactica finale. Going to be in a movie theater near you. And Michael Kramer is going to. I heard about that too. He's going to meet with the African Americans who he offended.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I guess with they're going to have a retired judge mediate the meeting. Yeah, maybe that story, I almost cut this from the list of things to talk about. Just I'm not sure that story isn't just getting too much attention. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but yeah, it still keeps coming back. And I guess apparently he's going to go and apologize to these guys in person. And yeah, I'm not sure what they can do. I mean, they can't really sue him.
I'd like to know why you need a judge for a guy.
They're suing him. For it's like $20 million.
What are you going to sue him for?
Sexual. racial something. What was the? I don't know what the word is. They're suing him for like $20 million or something like that.
Yeah, stupid defamation, crap. I think.
Defamation, there you go. Please. Libel, defamation, all that, public embarrassment, being a bad actor.
Well, wait a second. But couldn't Michael Ridges do the same thing? Public embarrassment? I'm suing you for public trying to embarrass me in public.
I guess
right?
So. He can countersue, but I don't think he wants this to go away, doesn't he? If he wants any kind of career.
I think he does. I mean, you know, he kind of... This kind of thing is the kiss of death, I guess. And a lot of stuff is coming out about previous things he's done. I guess he's kind of had these racial tirades before against Jewish people, and then he tried to claim that he was Jewish, and he really isn't, or there's no record of that. And,
yeah, but see, this just opens the door, because now everyone that gets ridiculed is going to want money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes or no?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No, it certainly could. I mean, yeah. You know, it sets a bad precedent.
I'm still reading about the Galactica finale. Sorry. I'm reading about the
so
Eye
now
of Jupiter.
Every time you go to a comedy club, there's going to be a disclaimer saying something
about...
You might be offended. You might be offended, and yeah. If you are, you
Please
lose
leave.
Your right.
That's right. Yeah. That's how it should be. You walk in a club, you got the clubs here all over town here in Vegas, the Improv,
first
you got
of all,
Second City.
When you go to a comedy club, you have the mentality that you want to laugh, or especially if you sit in front, you're going to have the
picked
chance
on.
That you're going to get picked on.
Yes.
Right.
And second of all... if you're going in there just to ridicule the entertainer, whoever it is, you should be escorted out, because I'm not there. I'm in there to watch the entertainer, not some guy, some jackass in the back heckling. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, moving on to 30 Rock. It's picked up for a full season. I managed to catch that. I caught that the other day. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's definitely better than Studio 60. Oh. Again, you know, NBC has Saturday Night Live. Now they have Studio 60, which is a drama essentially about Saturday Night Live, and then 30 Rock, which is the comedy about Saturday Night Live. And yeah, the show's not doing that well in the ratings, but it did get picked up.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And then that Daybreak, I can't believe that show's still on. You say it's dropping like a rock in the ratings, huh?
Yeah, well, it dropped from the first showing to the second. It dropped 50% of its audience. It's pulling in 3.8 share and 6 for the ratings. So that's just over 6 million viewers, which is that's really bad for ABC. I mean, Lost was pulling in around 16 or so.
Yeah. Kiss Daybreak goodbye.
What happened?
Yeah. It's dropping like a rock. The ratings are dropping off. Yeah.
Yeah,
and another episode I'm going to have to catch out on
MySpace
now.
And MySpace.
Did they say when they're going to cancel it?
Coming soon.
Well, they haven't announced yet, but I don't know that they have anything in the can.
Well, look, it was just a filler show anyways. Why cancel? What else are you going to put in there?
Yeah.
Well, no, it was
2020
it was
really or something
filler.
Like that.
I mean, it was really promoted. They were so sure of Lost that they could maintain the momentum of Lost through the hiatus that they were going to throw this show in. And you had a lot of really high expectations.
Well, how many episodes have they shot at Daybreak? You know?
Well, they've shown 3. I think they've shot...
No, they've shown more. I've seen more than 3. I think it's been 4. Well,
No, I'm pretty sure they've only shown... Well, they showed the 2 together. That's probably what you're thinking. They showed premiere was 2 hours.
2 hours so. Movie. Yeah, it was a 2-hour movie. They put 2 episodes, like Galactica, they throw 2 episodes together and say it's a movie.
No, I would say this past week was episode 4, counting the 2-hour premiere.
Oh, whatever. It's getting canceled anyway. Who cares what's left of that show?
Well, I'm saying how many have they shot?
I don't know. It'll be gone. It'll be on MySpace next week.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying when you put on when you put a show on, how many episodes do they usually have in the can?
Usually 13, don't they?
Well, no. They usually when a show premieres, they usually have 7 in the can, and they'll do the first or the final 6 or whatever they'll be working on during the first 3 or 4. So. I think, like, Smith, for example, it got canned after the 3rd showing, and I believe they had 10 episodes completed at the time they announced it. So they probably have about 10 hours, and they're probably still in production. With, I haven't heard specifically for Daybreak, but if it follows kind of the pattern that they follow, that's probably where it's at.
Well, that other show is canceled, 3 Pounds. They already yanked that out. That's CBS's brain surgery show.
yeah, that's just flat out canceled out.
I think these network executives need some brain surgery. They need a brain transplant.
But that shit was pulling in, you know, around 9 million viewers. So, you know, quite a bit higher than Daybreak.
Yeah.
Actually pulling in about what Jericho pulls in.
Huh.
A little lower, but...
Why they pull that off? That you think they? Yeah, well, it must be expensive because that one guy's in it. He's been in a lot of shows. Stanley Tucci. So maybe it's the expense of that show. You know.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too is the critical ratings. I mean, like Jericho, even though it's not pulling in the highest numbers, is very, you know, well regarded and gets a lot of good publicity, and a lot of the critics really like it. And 3 Pounds, I mean, just got nailed from the opening episode, and just, you know, every week it's you know, what the heck is this? Is it crap? It's another, you know, another hospital drama ripoff of, you know, 30 other shows.
And then and then the bad news for Jericho viewers is that when Friday Night Lights is going to be moved up against Jericho, huh?
Yeah, but you know, TiVo's coming to play, but Jericho's going to be off, I guess, until mid-February.
Yeah,
so.
February 14th, they come back with a recap, and then the 21st is going to be like a day before the nuke blast episode,
right,
or something like that.
Yeah, so another kind of a six-month-ago type episode like we had on Heroes last week. So,
yeah,
just showing the history and kind of how people got to where they are. So.
Yeah, now the fall season finale, I thought it was outstanding, of Jericho. They said they only did only 10.3 million, which is down a little bit from the previous week. Huh.
And right, but you got to remember, Jericho had that, during the finale with Dancing with Stars, it had that huge drop-off. It dropped down to, I think it was like 8.5 million or somewhere around there, and then it had to bounce back up.
Yeah.
So it's still holding good. I mean, 10 million is pretty, you know, it's a pretty strong showing, so the show is still holding up.
Yeah, and
well,
then I thought it was sweet. It almost made me cry when I learned that Gracie gave Dale her store and her will and everything. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, that was nice, that old bat. Yeah, you know, it wasn't such a bitch after all.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have killed her off. And then the whole thing, it blew me away that Johnston lost the mayor's race to Gray Anderson. Like, what?
Yeah, no, that was sad. You know, the way they kind of...
Well, they kind of just slipped that in.
Yeah.
It's like there was no vote. They didn't show anyone voting. They just kind
of... It's like a shock. It's like you go from that to one scene, all of a sudden, to you just show you at the City Hall with Gray Anderson taking the oath. I'm like, wow. It's like Galactica.
Yeah.
They kind of jumped ahead a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and I kind of missed it. I had to kind of rewind that.
Yeah.
Watching that, and it just, you know, it's like, what the heck is, you know, what the heck is that? I missed that.
That's so sad. Now, does that mean that Gray Anderson's going to be in the, you know, the main cast now? And not right now, he lists him as like a guest star or something. Must be, if he's the mayor, must be going to move him up or something, huh?
You'd think so. And, you know, I kind of get the idea that they really might not have planned to have him be as active as he has been. But
yeah.
He, you know, he's really the last, I guess, half of this, you know, first half of the season is really
taken off,
more of a main character.
Yeah, and
I noticed that Carol Barbie actually wrote this episode.
Oh, yes.
Finale, so.
Our close personal friend, Carol Barbie, yes. And now, I thought it was, you know, well, I wonder what they're going to do with Gail Green, or with Gail Green and Johnston now. Are they going to be, you know, like recurring characters now, or what? I wonder.
Well, you know, Johnston is still, I think he's still the main character of the show. I mean, really, the show rides on him and Skeet Ulrich, I guess. But.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. And then on in that last scene with all those survivors walking into town and Emily's fiancé, Roger, and that was pretty stunning. Right when they're about to her and Jake were about to get together, here comes the damn survivors walking in, and of course her fiancé is one of them, you know?
Yeah, I guess that should have been predictable.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a predictable ending for it, but
well, then,
yeah, that was a bit of a surprise.
Well, then Hawkins, whoever he's working with, says, we're coming to see you soon or something like that. You know, they ask him, what the hell are you doing or something like that on the laptop, or the and they show the satellite footage of him playing football with his son. You know?
Right.
So,
yeah, that was good. That
outstanding.
Was kind of spooky.
If you're not watching Jericho, you can go over to whodroppedthebomb.com and you can recap. They finally turned on the message board over there as well. So, you know, outstanding.
Yeah.
You know? And then Odell shooting that kid. What the hell's going on? Like those last three scenes, like, oh my God, if Dale shot the hell out of Mitch, you know, I don't
right.
think anything's going to happen to Dale because he's getting revenge on him for killing Gracie. And because he said that, you know, he heard, you know, because Mitch came to the store saying that, you know, I mean, the same deal I have with you with Gracie and all that. So he figured out he killed Gracie, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then Emily's father, Jonah, now he left town. know, and they view like he's kind of the reason why Johnston lost the election, huh?
Right. Yeah. Gray kind of playing up how he was going to catch the bad guys and bring order back to town. So
outstanding. Let's see here, Jonah. Heroes did very well. Now it's off for 6 weeks now.
Right. Yeah. Right. And the casting news is some pretty interesting stuff. I know it was talked about in the chat room. I don't know if it got mentioned on the air about George Takei is actually going to have a scene on there.
Sulu.
Sulu playing Hero's father.
Yeah, the Japanese guy. Yeah, whatever his name is. What the hell's his name?
Hero is the character's name.
Yeah,
it's Oksa, I think, is the actor.
And I also have a little tidbit here about the daytime version of Deal or No Deal. It's not going to be hosted by Howie Mandel. Who's hosting the daytime version of Deal or No Deal?
They haven't announced it yet, or I haven't seen it if they have. But that's been in the works for a while. The show's so popular at night. That's one of the ones that's driving NBC towards this getting away from the drama, you know, going to the game show and the reality TV. So,
interesting.
So they've been making a big deal about that there's going to now be a syndicated daytime version. But yeah, I guess Howie's too big of a star now with how well the show's doing.
He's got an ego about the size of this building. I heard stories of him from the comedy festival. He's got his ego's about the size of this building, you know. But
right.
Anyway. And then on DVD today, he said Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I've yet to go see that movie. I'm sorry. You know, Miami Vice without Almost in it, right?
Yeah, and I guess Almost had a chance to have a role in the movie, but he was busy with Galactica, so he didn't. But
smart man.
Dead Man's Chest is the highest grossing U.S. film ever. So I still haven't seen it myself.
No. And then the box office, Happy Feet, that Penguin movie, and then Casino Royale, they say it's gonna be the highest grossing Bond movie ever. I can't believe that.
Right. Yeah, and that's another one I still haven't seen yet. But those two, the Penguins and James Bond, have been facing off for the last 3 weeks, the top one and two movies.
Yeah. And then, of course, Nativity Scene, Story, that's flopping. And then Deck the Halls. And then the big movie, I'm going to go see this movie, Apocalypto. It's Mel Gibson's movie. That's supposed to be outstanding, huh?
Yeah, that starts this week. So there's a lot of concern. Disney, who actually, I guess, is the actual owner of the film or the producer, they're saying that they don't expect anything to come out of, or they don't expect Mel Gibson's problems to hurt the film, but... I don't know. We'll see. It should be an interesting.
Did you hear Daniel Craig say that he says for the next James Bond, he wants to do a gay scene?
Wow.
Really?
He does.
Are you serious?
And he said he'll even shoot full frontal nudity.
Oh, my God.
I swear to God.
At the end of him, he's fired. Hell, I should play James Bond then. Give me those girls. I'll put her tuxedo. And then what else? Blood Diamond. It's that DiCaprio movie where he's got that fake accent.
I hear that's supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, but the diamond industry. The diamond industry isn't very happy because it portrays them in a bad light.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of... And the State Department actually made a statement about the movie tonight. That was kind of on the 5 o'clock news. They're concerned that the movie's going to give a bad impression. I guess they've supposedly got all kinds of regulatory stuff in to prevent diamond trade money or illegal diamond trade money from funding wars. So
interesting.
So they're concerned about that, but we'll see.
And then The Holiday with Cameron Diaz's movie with Winslet, Jude Law, Jack Black, and Eli Wallach. I didn't know he was still alive. And then Unaccompanied Minors. It's like a Home Alone type of a thing, huh?
Yeah, basically Home Alone in the airport.
Yeah.
And then the guy from the 70s show, I guess, is the...
Wilder Valderrama. He does that show Yo Mama or something like that on whatever the hell it is. And then actually ABC says they're moving Lost out of Idol's way. So ABC is going to move Lost to 10 o'clock time slot, away from Idol.
Well, away from Idol and Criminal Minds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then CBS just gave Criminal Minds the time slot after the Super Bowl for Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
So I wish they would put Jericho in that slot, but I guess they have more faith in Criminal Minds than they do for Jericho, huh?
Yeah, well, Criminal Minds has been performing for them. I mean, it unseated Lost is, you know, kind of from that time slot. Lost had never lost its time slot until this year. Yeah. So,
Dr. Netranger, I'd let you go at the end of the program here. We'll check you out on MediaBoulevard.com as well as Media Boulevard Magazine.
Sounds good.
All right, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, have a good night.
All right.
And that was Dr. Net Ranger once again with our pop culture, finishing off our pop culture hour. I'd like to thank him, Professor Koenig Rules, and of course, Commander Jeff Huber for being on and talking about foreign policy and everything else. And next week, we'll have on, Justin Reddy from the 2008 Political Perspective blog. And tomorrow morning is Daily Noise. Friday is Spankwagon, followed by King Hesh. Subject to discussion.